Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or a bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, kindly send them to me at my email at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Without any further ado, I'm going to introduce my special guest for tonight, and to me she is extra special because I've had the opportunity to meet with this woman at least 4 or 5 times over the years. And for those of you who listen to the show every week, she certainly has had an influence on certainly the song that opens up the show. And I'd like to introduce Heather Bennett Nunez. Heather, thank you so much for coming back to our show. And I'm introducing
you. Of course, Bonnie, thank
you. Yeah, I'm introducing
you
as Heather Bennett Nunez because a lot of people don't know you by the Nunez since you've gotten married. But they certainly knew you as Heather Bennett.
Yeah.
And I remember that day just so well when I first met you in California, and you talked about this song, how you could see clearly now, because everything all of a sudden was making sense, and that's how this
right.
became the theme song for this show, because of you.
Well,
I think
so
of you
you're such
when
a
the song is playing, Heather.
I think about it every time I hear it, too, because it does remind me of sort of getting out of that really stuck, really confusing, and really painful time with my ex-husband. And really, you were the first person, because I had sought out a lot of counsel, professional and through the church. You were the first person that just bottom-lined it for me, just gave me the bottom line, which is these relationships, as much as you want them to work, as much as you hope and pray that they can work, really are built on shifting sand. And it's just a matter of time before it all comes crumbling down. And you gave it to me straight, Bonnie.
I do. And, in fact, it's so funny because, you know, we have an upcoming book coming up, A Straight Wives, Shattered Lives 3, that I'm really excited about. That'll be out sometime, probably around Christmas time. And
cool.
One of the things I write in there, you know, when I talk about my own comments, besides all the ladies' stories, is that people come to me who don't agree with me, and they'll say to me, well, I'm there just to destroy people's marriages. And, you know, people come to me in good faith, and look what I do to them. And I really say to that, ha, ha, ha. I mean, they're not coming to me to save their marriages because they know that's not what I'm about. I'm not about saving marriages that are destructive marriages. And there's plenty of groups that are out there. If you want to find groups to tell you to stay together, they're out there. I believe in having a quality of life. And I believe that every day you lose to these marriages, you know, it's a day of your life that you're never going to get back. And especially when I read all these stories about all the wasted years that women had. And how long were you married altogether? A long time.
24 years, yep. Yep, it's a long time.
Like a lifetime.
Time. It's a
long 24
time.
Years.
Yeah. Yeah, so I got married when I was, I'm going to say, maybe 28. And then I left around 50, but it took a little while for the divorce to get done. So I married in 1990, and I divorced in 2014.
So let's go back and tell your story for those people who haven't heard the show before with you. And you met your husband, and what year was it?
So I actually met my husband in college, and we were in a university from 1980 to 1985, and he was just a really outgoing, smart, articulate, charismatic guy, and so I was always drawn to him, and we both were getting majors in communications and specializing in public relations.
Mm-hmm. And did you go together for a while? Or?
No, we dated on and off. But, you know, Bonnie, it's so funny. When I look back at it now, we would make out when both of us had been drinking at a party. Or he would like, act like he liked me and then not pursue me. And it was very confusing even then as to why, you know, he would make out with me when he was super drunk, but then the next day kind of ignore. So
hello.
So then we, yeah. Hi, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I hear you good.
Okay, so then we met again 5 years after college and began to date then, and dated for a year and then got married, and the rest is history. 24 years of it.
Now, when you were going with him, was there any way that you could have even thought that he was gay?
Well, you know what? He came to me and he said to me, people think I'm gay, but I'm not. And I actually knew his high school girlfriend because she was at our university. And I knew he was having sex with his high school girlfriend while we were at university. So I knew he was having heterosexual sex with lots of people while we were in college. So he told me that he felt sad and frustrated that people thought he was gay, but he wasn't. So some people would say that he had some of the mannerisms of being gay, but it was back when being metrosexual was in. So like people who, men who, you know, would like to have their nails look nice or have a very tailored outfit and care about how they look. So I just thought that was metrosexual stuff. I didn't see it as gay, especially since he was dating somebody I knew, sleeping with somebody I knew, and said to me, people think I'm gay, but I'm not.
Do you think he knew he was gay at that time?
That is always going to be the question. I think obviously part of him knew that he was gay, but he was only dating females at that time. He didn't actually ever date a guy. I do think that he got intoxicated and had some sexual relationships with men, but he didn't tell me about that while we were dating or, you know, in the early stages of our marriage.
And I think that this is something that I like to keep repeating over and over and over again. In fact, my newsletter that'll be out in the next week, you know, emphasizes this also, that when people say, oh, I was so stupid, how didn't I know? How did we know? I mean, what would we know? You go with a guy,
right.
He sleeps with you, you know, he slept with other girls, you know, even if he has metrosexual or effeminate types of ways, you know, who swears he loves you, he's not gay, he gets upset if people accuse him of being gay. Why would we think he's gay? Why would, I was brought up that gay is somebody who wants somebody who's the same. Weren't you brought up that way?
Exactly. Yep. I thought to myself, hey, he can't be gay. He's been sleeping with Liz for like 6 years. I mean, they had a long-term sexual relationship. Like, how can he be gay? He can sleep with me. He has the capacity. How can he be gay?
Well, that's what we don't understand. And I think to some
right.
degree, they don't understand it either. And I still,
yeah.
once again, I hold them responsible for a lot once they're married to us. But before they're
yeah.
married to us, I give them a pass because I really do believe in almost all cases, not every single case. Some cases men really knew they were gay, but the overwhelming majority of those guys who can perform heterosexual sex, they want to be straight. They don't want to be gay.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard
yeah.
life to have to be gay, even in this modern time and age. I know when I lived
yeah.
in California back in the 1960s, gay was very open back then. And I never even knew from gay till I got out to California. And I was 17 years old. And I didn't understand
yeah.
it. I felt sorry for gay people that they weren't straight. They weren't feeling sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I say, in California, I was exposed to a lot of gay. I had gay friends. But they were
mm-hmm.
gay friends, you know, that you knew that they were attracted to people of the same sex. There would be no way that I would be thinking that somebody who's attracted to me, who loves me, who can make love to me, is going to be gay. So I think that we're
exactly.
so hard on ourselves, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly. It just doesn't make sense. We can't make sense of that. How can my husband be gay? He chose me. He married me. He made a commitment to me. We have children. How can my husband be gay? This it makes no sense in our brain.
Exactly. And that, I think, is the hardest thing to register for us. Did anybody ever come back to you and say, well, we always knew he was gay?
Oh, of course. Different people that we knew from college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a couple of relatives, a couple of his cousins came to me later and said, we always knew. It's not very helpful. In fact, I actually think it's pretty painful as a wife to hear that. Because then you want to say,
mm-hmm.
well, why didn't you stop us? Why didn't you stop us then? Why didn't you stop him if you knew?
Well, I think these are good answers to that too. And in some ways, I give those people a pass also. People, they don't understand
yeah.
gay either. So they think if he's marrying
right.
us, well, maybe those feelings passed. You know, I don't think people
right.
still to this day really understand homosexuality. And especially because some cultures, some churches, they keep insisting that this is a choice people make. And that is the choice
right.
that they can not make. And,
exactly.
you know, you come from a Christian background, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I became Christian later in life when I was about 32.
Okay.
I always believed in God. I didn't have any construct or formal education in it. And my ex-husband was Lutheran, but at the same time, he kind of really got into Christianity. So him coming out would have become even more painful and difficult as we really immersed ourselves in the Christian culture. And we were, you know, traditional evangelical Christians. And so the message was that, you know, you get married for life. And the only way you get a divorce is if there's actual adultery. Now, of course, we know that there is adultery with these guys, but women don't want to believe that, even when all the signs are in your face. We don't want to believe that our husbands can be unfaithful to us. It's just not in our nature, especially once they've decided to become Christian and you think you're having this very Christian home. And I guess I didn't realize it at the time. It just made the double life go even stronger when I reflect upon it now. It just made the double life that much stronger in him.
As a Christian church, you know, since you were involved in it after you, you know, became more religious, was there pressure there that if someone was gay, that that was a choice?
I would say in general, the traditional teaching in Christian churches is that it is a choice and it's a poor one at that. Now, there are more forward-thinking or progressive churches that say it's completely biology. And then you do have some educated Christian psychologists that say it's a mixture, like everything is nature and nurture. It's a mixture. And their idea is that some men are gay because if they have an attachment injury with their father, and it's an unhealthy way of getting same-sex love. But that's, you know, just different.
Yes, I've heard those wacko theories. I'm sorry, but, you know. If every guy who had a bad relationship with his father was gay, it'd be half the world would be gay. So I don't buy it.
You're absolutely right, Bonnie. You're absolutely right. And, you know, my whole thing is when you marry somebody and you're making a promise, and in a church you're making a covenant, not just with that person, but with in front of God, I don't have it in my bones to be unfaithful, but the second somebody is unfaithful in the marriage, they need to own that. And so what got to me is knowing part of me knew that something was wrong. Part of me knew that, you know, there was no sexual energy coming towards me, but because I myself am an honest and faithful person, I could not conceive that my husband was not an honest and faithful person. And I think that's what keeps people really, really trapped and making excuses for very little sex or no sex in the marriage, is we make excuses. Like they're working so much, they're commuting, they're not feeling good. We have a spiritual relationship, that's a good enough connection. So all of that really becomes malarkey, and that's why it was really a breath of fresh air, Bonnie, when you just basically told me, like, straight guys are not interested in gay porn. Straight guys don't look at penis. Call them penis guy, call them whatever. Straight guys are not into that. And I'm like, you know what? That makes sense. That makes sense. We get so confused trying to figure stuff out, and so confused because they're trying to confuse us. They're trying to take our gut instincts and make us feel like we're crazy. So we get really confused and really lost in this stuff, Bonnie.
And it's so true. And I don't know in your case, I mean, you know, but I've seen, you know, for people who don't know who you are, you know, in person, I will say that Heather is one of the most beautiful women I've ever met. Now, I don't mean just inside, but also outside. And equally outside as she is inside. Well, it's the truth. So any straight man would go crazy to be with you. I mean, that's the reality. You're like a tall Barbie doll. And
as a
husband that you would have wouldn't want to touch you, maybe it wouldn't have the same effect on you if he wasn't you. I don't know what reasons he was giving you. Was he ever making it like it was anything to do with you?
He would periodically would say, you know, lose 10 more pounds, and then we'll have sex more often. And by that time, I was getting so jaded. I go, no, that's not going to make a difference. I mean, the thing that gets really discouraging is, you know, I was watching shows on, like, low testosterone. Like, Oprah Winfrey had the sexless marriage. I mean, you're racking your brain trying to figure this out because your girlfriends are having to beat their husbands off with a stick. In the meantime, when I'm trying to have sex once a month with my husband, he looks at me like he'd rather take the trash out. And that hurts. That hurts our feminine spirit, you know? It hurts.
Well, that's what I said in the book, that I blame all of them, even though I give some of them a pass on why they got married, but I blame all of them for destroying our feminine spirit. And many of them did it in a very cruel way. I mean, many of them took every weak point you had and just made you feel like every failure that you have for your husband wanting to love you is because of how you look, how you smell. I'll never forget this one woman who was just crying to me because she would scrub her body every night. He would say to her, "How can I have sex with you? You smell." And she really believed it. You know, she didn't smell. He didn't want to have sex with her. And when I think of all the nights that women go to bed crying because they're sexually rejected and emotionally rejected, and you know what? They say sex is an important part of marriage. That's when you have a gay husband who doesn't want to have it. It is an important part of marriage. And you have a marriage. Isn't it an important part of marriage?
It is, and it's so therapists call what I'm experiencing with my husband, Frank, a corrective emotional experience, which means, like, it's an experience of how things should have been, right? And so I come reflect back, and I feel so sad for the 35-year-old Heather or the 40-year-old Heather or the 45-year-old Heather who felt like nothing she ever did was good enough. So he wouldn't attack my body so much as just like I just wasn't good enough. Good enough housekeeper, good enough parent, good enough, cook, whatever. I just wasn't good enough in every way, shape, or form. And the thing is, the more you're rejected sexually, the more you reject yourself sexually. Like, you reject that need in yourself. And you just say, okay, I will just deactivate that need. I won't think about that need because it's too painful to have this need and have it constantly not fulfilled. So I just told myself, like, that part of me is shut down. And I just I stopped going to him, because why go to a well looking for water and what you get is a cup of sand? And that's what it is with these guys. Every time you ask, you get a cup of sand.
Exactly, and nobody could say it better than that. So, eventually, how did you find out for sure?
Well, I had suspected for a while, and of course there was tons of gay porn, right? And I was so naive when the internet came. I never touched the computer, I never looked at it. And I thought, when we were getting all this spam for porn, he would just say, everybody gets that. Nothing, and I have, like, naively, I'm like, oh man, what a bummer. Most people, when they get 10 emails, 6 of them are for porn. Wow, that's too bad. I mean, I'm so naive on it, honestly. So I get mad at myself for being naive, but then on the other hand, I say to myself, is it wrong to trust your husband? In a healthy relationship, there should be trust between husband and wife. So my mistake was I trusted my husband because I knew I was trustworthy. So I gave him, I ascribed to him the traits that I had in my own heart. I'm trustworthy. He must be trustworthy. So everybody's getting 6 out of 10 emails is porn.
And
then
exactly.
And then when you first figure out that it's gay porn, like the first time I actually saw like an image of men having sex, I thought I was going to throw up. I thought that my brain was going to leave my body. I mean, I was stunned, and I got around in the car. I was living in rural Oregon at the time, and I just drove around for 2 hours like a numbed out zombie. And I called a famous Christian psychologist group. It was called Focus on the Family, and tried to find a counselor for us to go to that could help us with this issue. And I have to say, one counselor did try to get my ex to come out. I can see it now. I didn't see it then. But he was really talking about the hidden aspects of my husband and the parts of my husband that he doesn't feel safe sharing, and really worked on trying to bring that out and into the open. But, there's always a reason, like we can't afford it or he doesn't like the counselor. These guys will fire many counselors if they feel like the counselor's getting too close to what's actually going on.
Exactly, and that happens all the time where they just say, I'm not going back. That counselor doesn't know what he's talking about, and I'm not going to go there.
Right. Exactly. And really, these guys, like when you go into marriage counseling, this is what kills me, is they do think, oh, well, those problems in the marriage, well, we're each apart, so it's 50-50. But you know what, Bonnie? Bullshit to that. It's not 50-50 problems in the marriage. The problem is one person's a liar with a double life, and the other person still loves them and doesn't know. It's a 98% to 2% thing. We just can't even conceptualize half of us on what they're actually doing. It's so mind-boggling. And it's not unlike the women I work with now as a therapist who are married to sex and porn addicts. Those guys have huge, huge double lives. So there is some correlation. I'm not saying every gay guy is a porn addict, but I would say for those of us that are married to closeted gay guys, oftentimes that's the case. There's also a porn addiction going on. And then that leads to them just sexually acting out in the construct, within the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only going to fantasize so long, so.
Exactly. It's only a matter of time before you keep looking at McDonald's commercials before you want to go out and get that Big Mac yourself. As I had a gay man once tell me. Actually, he was a guest on the show, and he explained it to women. This is how it happens. You go and you see a McDonald's billboard. You keep passing it, and within 2 weeks, you're in that McDonald's eating that Big Mac. And I think the same thing with gay porn, right?
Absolutely. Now, my husband at the time, Jeff, would admit to the porn. He's like, yes. I'm looking at gay porn, but he would swear up and down to me that he would never be unfaithful to me, even in private or with a therapist. He's like, all I do is jack off to gay porn. I don't do anything else, right? And even when he said that, a part of me knew it wasn't true, but being the person that I was and believing in marriage, I felt I was stuck because I had made a commitment to my husband at that point, it wasn't even about wanting to disappoint my husband or my kids. I didn't want to disappoint God by not being faithful to my promise to love Jeff sacrificially. It wasn't until Jeff developed his third drinking problem, went and got a sponsor at AA, and I found his AA journal where I saw the truth, where he said, I've had numerous anonymous sexual encounters with men risking my life and Heather's. And when I read those words, two things happened. Three things. Number one, it was my get out of jail free card from my Christian construct. Like I now had proof. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's a sense of relief knowing that your intuition was right the whole time. As you've been lied to, your intuition is right. You're not crazy. And then number three, it's anger. Like, how dare you say that the problems in the marriage are my fault? How dare you accuse me of being a controlling and angry? The things that he would accuse me of being weren't who I was as a person, but it's confusing. All of this stuff is really confusing, but it was. It's hard to say that it was a blessing that I became an alcoholic and wrote a journal and then I read it. Because when I read it, I'm like, okay, here's proof I have, and I'm going to a divorce attorney as soon as I can. So
that's really heavy, powerful stuff. I just want to go back to the point you made about marriage counseling and these marriages. One of the things that I always say is that any other marriage, yes, it takes two to tango. In these particular marriages, it's just one, and it's the gay one. Because everything you're doing is based on a conception that you have that's not true. So let's say when men come to me and they tell me that my wife is very suspicious. She is? Well, are you cheating on her? Yes. Well, do you give her reason to be? I mean, why are you angry she's suspicious if you are cheating on her? Well, my wife is very controlling. How is she controlling? She wants to know where I'm going all the time. Well, when you're going out, are you cheating on her? Yes. Well, so I really feel that anything that we do, I say there are no better wives than straight wives because nobody tries harder than we do to make something work that's not workable. And we're the nicest, kindest, most giving. Are we not? Seriously. Do we not try harder than anybody?
We try harder than anyone I know. We try so, so hard. And then you add on top of it, if you have a faith system that says, you know, marriage is forever, like, you know, we're the nicest, we're the kindest, we're the most self-sacrificing, and we suffer such a long time. My non-Christian friends, when this was all going down, would say to me, Heather, I can't believe you didn't cheat on him. You could have, you should have, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't have that in me. It's not part of my character. And I didn't think the person I said I do to had that in their character, but clearly I was wrong. But yes, we if we had married a straight guy, it would have worked. Okay? Bottom line, if we had married a straight guy, it would have worked.
And that's why I say you can't base these marriages on anything. And any man who ever tells me it's anything other than homosexuality, I have nothing to say to him, because that
right.
is the whole problem. You are a gay man living in a straight marriage where you don't belong. You don't understand what it is to be a straight man, so you can't give your wife what she needs as a woman. And when she's
right.
frustrated or angry or upset because you are just making her feel like she's worthless, then why
yep.
don't you take that responsibility? But they don't.
No, they
in
don't.
Almost all cases.
They don't.
Very rarely do I ever see any man say, you know what, you're right. You know, I was wrong. You know, it's not her fault. It's my fault. I very rarely hear that. I still hear, well, regardless. Now, there is no regardless. You're a gay man. You don't
mm-hmm.
belong there, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's that simple, Bonnie. It's that simple. And that's why I love how clearly you speak. It is refreshing, it is real, and it is truth.
Right. And even though people would like to rip it down and tear it up, you show me the happy couple who's straight and gay and who are living a happy life, and then I'll say, okay, there's a happy couple. I haven't seen it yet. I see women who stay in these marriages because they exist. They're not happy. They exist.
Nope.
They're satisfied because
yep.
of the, you know, there's different reasons they stay, financial reasons. You know, they've had every ounce of, you know, security locked out from under their nose. They have nothing to stand up with. I mean, I get it. You know, I understand why people don't have the strength to do it. But don't ever tell me you're in a happy marriage. And the other thing
right.
that I hate when people tell me is that, well, in every marriage, you know, sex dwindles. Okay. Maybe sex does go down as years go on, but at least you had it to start with to feel good about yourselves, right?
Yeah, right. My big joke with my husband now is I'm having more sex and better sex in my 50s than I ever had in my 30s and 40s because I'm with
mm-hmm.
a straight guy that loves me, you know? So I'm having
and,
the best sex life now.
And I told a young lady yesterday, she called me from Nigeria because she's very, very upset about her situation. And she's 35 years old. I said, I'm double your age. I'm going to be 70 next year. And my soulmate and I, we still make love every week. You know, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying it's the way that people express their love to each other. It's not just about sex. It's about
right.
loving someone. It's about intimacy. It's about,
yep.
you know, emotional bonding together. It's what builds the relationship so that when you can have it at some point, at least you've built up all these wonderful things with each other, which when
exactly.
you're married to a gay man, this isn't going to be happening. I mean,
no.
you know, I'm not saying that, you know, you can't have sex. I'm not saying you won't have sex, but it's not going to be the sex that you deserve to have. Is that true?
Exactly. It's a totally different thing. It's a totally different thing. The difference between a straight guy who adores you, and feels so lucky to have you, and just feels, oh my gosh, so how wonderful it is that I get to be intimate with you. Wow, I'm relishing that. Versus, oh God, here it is. Okay, I got to take care of her like I got to take care of taking out the trash. And it's
right.
wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And they're not even emotionally, like, towards the end, after like 10, 20 years, whatever, of that first marriage, he wasn't even halfway emotionally present for it. I just
They're
felt like
there.
An empty vessel receiving
right,
whatever
exactly.
he had to get. There was no real connection.
In
sex addiction,
yeah.
In sex addiction, they call it.
Up.
Yeah. they keep the pretense up, and they call it vaginal masturbation, which means like they're having sex in a vagina, but they're totally in their head fantasizing about having sex with a dude.
Well, that's the only way they can do it.
Like,
it's not like they're thinking about you. They have to fantasize, and every man that I spoke to, without exception, has told me that as time goes on, the only way he's able to have sex is to fantasize about men while they're doing it. And that's why a lot of times they don't want to do it looking at your face. They want to do it from behind because they don't want to have to look at you. And, you know, one thing since you are the sex expert now, that, you know, that's your practice, tell me this. I say to women, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, all men want sex. So they're not having it with you. They're having it with someone else. That's the starting premise that I give them. When you're 35 or 40 years old.
They're not
is that correct?
You. That sexual energy is going somewhere. If that sexual energy isn't going towards you, then it's either going to another person or it's going to chronic masturbation. Masturbation with porn, masturbation by themselves. But that sexual energy is going somewhere, Bonnie, if it's not going to the wife. It's going somewhere.
It didn't just puff, get erased.
It's not low T. It's not stress and anxiety. It's not any of those things that you think it is, that they say it is. It's, if they're not with you, they're using that energy out.
How about men who tell their wives now that they're asexual? Tell me about that.
You know what? I think that's another cop-out. That's right around with, like, the low-T stuff. It's like, oh, I love you, but I'm just not a sexual person anymore. Well, unless, like, you are with them at the doctor's and they get a medical diagnosis with that, maybe I'd believe that, but I'd say 99% of the case that's not true, that the sexual energy is going elsewhere. That and being bi and all these other things, I just think it's a ruse to get them out of having sex with their wives.
I agree, and that's why I say it's, you know, everybody has all these different fluidities, names for sex, starting with asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, metrosexual. If it's not heterosexual to me, it means you're not straight. And that's why I tell people, you don't have to say you're gay. You can say you're one of 132 different varieties. It's a choice of straight or unstraight. And if you're unstraight, you can be whatever you want, but you're not straight. And I think really it's that simple. It doesn't have to be more complicated. People are saying, I'm on a Kinsey scale of 5. No, you're not. Whatever. Once you pass that 1, if you're anything other than heterosexual, you're not straight. And I think that's what women have to live with. You know, do you want to live with someone who's unstraight? You know, if he tells you, well, I just have fantasies. What about men who just tell their wives they have fantasies, Heather?
I call total bullshit on that. They have fantasies, but then they're touching themselves or looking at their fantasy online and reinforcing it, right? So basically, sex just becomes an act of narcissism with themselves or with a gay man. But again, it just goes, why confuse it with all these things, Bonnie? The truth is, a straight woman deserves a straight man. And that's how you have a good sexual relationship, a straight man and a straight woman. And any of these variations will shred a woman's sense of sexual worth, sense of sexual value. It just can't be maintained when you have straight woman and non-straight guy. It just can't be maintained. I don't care how much love. I don't care if you're praying the blood of Jesus every day. I don't care. It just can't be maintained. And it's not the way marriage is supposed to work.
So here's something that's been coming up a lot in our support group. Let's talk about narcissism for a moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on this particular one. I really do believe that gay men who marry women do have a propensity towards narcissism because they're living their life as a lie. So they're always having to protect themselves by looking out for themselves and putting themselves first, becoming controlling so people don't find out their secrets. You know, I think it's a whole psychological thing there. But I had people ask me this. If somebody's a narcissist, I've been told that you know, sometimes they'll have sex with anybody, anything, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're gay. What are your feelings on that?
You know, Connie, this is where it gets a little bit confusing. So there are narcissists that exist on planet Earth that are not gay. Of course, I deal with them in my practice. I mean, you still get all these controlling, weird things. They don't take responsibility for their actions. And the only time a straight narcissist guy comes into my practice is when a wife's about to leave him. Because, see, a narcissist never thinks anything's their fault. They don't have any
right.
insight to the behavior, right? And they think they're
mm-hmm.
special. They often think that normal rules don't apply to them. Okay. So you can have, you know, do I think that closeted gay men who are married to women have a stronger propensity, a stronger percentage of them are probably narcissistic as well? Yes, I do. Because they care more about how things look than how things are. And they invest
mm-hmm.
a lot of time in kind of creating a facade of how things look versus how things are.
So how about people who are just narcissists? Do they just don't care about having sex with anybody because it's as long as it's good for their ego? Or I'm not talking about gay men who become narcissists. I'm talking about narcissistic men and who are straight, for instance, who identify as straight.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to lump all narcissists into categories, and like anything else, there's, I don't know, 8 or what of 10 criteria, and somebody might have traits, like 4 of the traits
mm-hmm.
out of 6 of them. But remember, with a narcissist, if you're in a relationship with them, their pain wins. You can come up there and go, gosh, you know, I have a headache, and they'll say, I have a brain tumor. I was just diagnosed. You can go
mm-hmm.
to them with whatever your thoughts are or whatever your feelings are, and they'll be like, cry me a river, world's smallest violin, my thoughts, my pain wins. So I feel sorry for any woman, whether you're, I mean, it's worse with a gay guy and you're straight, but being married to a narcissist is misery. Because even if they're all dressed up and nice, and I've met plenty of narcissists who are pastors, plenty of them who are preachers, or elders in a church, they love that thing of being special. They love that rules don't apply to them because they're special. And above else, their pain wins. No matter what you say to them, no matter how you try and say it, their pain wins.
And I think that's really true because I know with my narcissistic ex-husband, you know, I had a headache. He had a worse, he had, like you say, a brain tumor. I was sick, he was sicker. You can never just have your own day of being ill without them being worse than you are. And
yep.
I found that extremely annoying that, you know, I just never had any time for myself, you know, have a day of injury without, you know,
yep.
him getting worse. And I don't
exactly.
know why they feel the need to do that. Do you know why they do that?
Well, we could get into what is the root of narcissism, but the root of all personality disorders has to do with early childhood and, poor attachment with either mom or dad or both. So that those ideas, they don't have ego strength. They don't have this sense, internal sense that I'm okay and perfectly lovable for the reality of who I am. So a narcissist will puff up who they are in order to feel okay with themselves. Somebody who, the other side you get is what we call borderlines, and there sometimes you get a narcissist and a borderline thing going together with these gay guys. The borderline part feels is very afraid of being abandoned, right? So I can't tell my straight wife the truth because that will be the end of the marriage, and I will be abandoned. So they
mm-hmm.
also keep the lie going because they can't tolerate being alone. And when I did finally, tell my husband I was going to divorce him, I was thinking, now remember, I wasn't always a therapist. I was just a person studying, you know, I was a stay-at-home mom for 15 years. I wasn't always a therapist. So I was
mm-hmm.
thinking when I told my husband that we were going to have a divorce, that he'd say, oh, you know, but you've been such a great wife and I love you so much. I love your heart. I love your care. I thought he would say something about me. Ha, ha, ha. He started crying and just talked about how he's never wanted to be alone, that being alone is his greatest fear, and I can't believe that he's going to be alone. And this was the image that came to my mind, Bonnie, is I felt like I was a giant boob and he was a baby who was getting weaned from being a nursing infant. I felt like I was a giant boob to him, where he was sucking the life force out of me, and now he was going to be abandoned.
And that's the whole thing. Mine always felt that he was being victimized. No matter what he did wrong, for some reason, he ended up being a victim.
Yep.
You know, there was nothing ever that he, you know, he always felt he was kind and good to everyone, and how do people always screw him?
Well,
you know, he was kind and good at his own convenience just to suck them in. But that would be it. You know, then he would twist them and manipulate them, and then he'd be upset. Was yours like that at all?
You know, there's a lot of manipulation, but also a lot of just poor, what I call ego strength in these guys, that ultimately they're creating this facade and this fake reality and this double life because they can't sit in the honesty of who they are as a person. They can't feel their own sense of self-love and unconditional acceptance for themselves. They can't do it. And we as their wives can't do it for them. If you love somebody that's a narcissist or you love somebody that has a borderline personality disorder, it's like trying to pour love into an empty cup, a cup that has a hole at the bottom. I don't care how often you pour stuff in there. I don't care what the viscosity of the liquid is. I don't care what you try and do. They cannot hold it because they have such poor ego strength. Even if, like, mine was a senior vice president of corporate communications for a Fortune 50 company. It doesn't matter what their job is. It doesn't matter what the accolades are on the outside. Their internal dialogue is, if you really knew me, you would leave me. I'm worthless. I'm a piece of shit. That's their internal dialogue. And then they do all this other behavior to cover it up.
Well, they cover it up pretty good. Let me ask your opinion of this, don't I? But how does this affect their relationships, like with the children?
So it's sad. It's really, really sad. I think it's harder on boys and young men trying to come to adulthood because they don't have a model on what that looks like as a healthy man. So I think a lot of them get stuck at sort of like a younger developmental stage because they don't have a man that they can model themselves after. For girls, what I found with my daughter once I left is now she became his caretaker. He wanted her to kind of pick up the slack that I had taken all those years of propping him up. And she actually did for a couple years to her own demise, but now she's a much healthier and stronger person. But for a while, once I was gone, he just kind of wanted to lean on my daughter to prop him up. So it's really hard on the kids. And, you know, these guys are just broken people. Like, if I wanted to be compassionate, I'm just going to say they're broken people. And they love their children in their own broken way, but they can't be a good and competent father. They just don't have it in them most of the time.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And another thing that I tell women is this, like I was telling this one woman today, and I keep repeating it. You're unhappy, you're crying, your life is miserable. I understand it. But don't you think that your children see you miserable every day and unhappy? And she says, yes, my daughter says, Mommy, why are you crying? I really believe in my heart that when children see this, they blame themselves for your unhappiness. You know, they don't know what's going on, and they just see you're unhappy. No matter what you say to them, I know that I went through a divorce with straight parents, you know, and so I had to feel that way too, that, you know, when my parents would fight, they were fighting over, they'd always have to bring up the children, so I felt they're fighting because I'm doing something wrong. And when your parents are unhappy, children internalize that they're partially causing that unhappiness. And no matter how much you say to them, no, it's not you, it's not you, they don't believe it. You know, they think they are partially responsible. And they pick up on your unhappiness. And not only that, but you have to be the role model for them, because they're going to repeat whatever that they've learned that you're going to stay in. They're going to repeat that for themselves. I mean, that's just the way life is. It's what you know. Am I right?
It totally is. I mean, you know, an example of that, right? I had an alcoholic mom, right? So at age 12, I started kind of taking over for my mom in terms of helping my brother and sister with homework, putting them to bed, taking on adult responsibility, taking on responsibility that shouldn't have been mine, right? So I had still a broken part of my heart that said I couldn't save mommy. But when I saw the broken parts of Jeff, I thought, well, I will work on fixing him. So I spent a lot of time and energy thinking that the things going on with Jeff were fixable when they truly were not fixable. And I stuck out in that marriage because I thought, well, it's better to raise children in an intact family system. But what broke my heart, Bonnie, is to have my 20-year-old son, he's 28 now, but my 20-year-old son, when I was leaving, said, Mom, I wish you would have left Dad when I was 12. It would have been so much better.
Mm-hmm. And I think most children tell that to their parents afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, parents feel, well, I have to stay here. I have to stay here. I can't break up a family because, you know,
right.
It's, you know. But I always say, you're doing a disservice to your children. I know when I ended my marriage, my kids were little kids. They were already, my daughter had a nurse was shot from listening to him screaming and yelling all the time when he couldn't get his way for everything. And I thought,
yeah.
She's already shaking and having nervous, you know, from her yelling. And she's only 4 or 5 years old. What's going to happen in another, you know, 5, 10, 15 years?
Yep.
Is she going to be a total nervous wreck? Do I want to do this to my children? Do I want them to be a, you know, dish rag like I had become? Because, you know, when you live with somebody who yells at you, like I always say, he was always, you know, shouting me down to shutting me up, you know, and you just kind of become complacent and give in to everything. I didn't want my kids growing up like that. You know, I just didn't. It wasn't fair to them to have to listen to him yelling because he's frustrated because he's in a marriage where he didn't belong to start with and taking it out on us.
Right.
And that's not to say that he didn't love his children to the best of his ability, but I think he's just limited on how much he understood what love is because he could never love anybody as much as himself.
Exactly.
He always had to come first.
Exactly.
His needs had to come first. And I'll never even forget, like, one night we were at a restaurant many years ago when you were allowed to smoke in restaurants. And my son had just gotten out of the hospital, terrible disease that eventually took his life. And smoke would really bother him. He was like 6 years old, and he just got out of the hospital. His lungs weren't right. And he's sitting there smoking, and I said, do you mind? And we weren't even together then. I said, would you mind smoking, you know, outside? You know, it's not good for him. Well, let him turn his head the other way. You know, like, you know, I'm not changing how I do things. You know, what can he say with something like that? You know, it's all about them all of the time. And some of them are worse than others, but, you know, they're all pretty much the same, right?
Right. And at one point I do want to say, Bonnie, I think sometimes can be confusing for women stuck in these marriages is, number one, we don't understand how prolific their lying is and how they're lying on so many different levels. And number two, it's not always screaming and yelling. My ex and I never fought. But what happens is you become like okay roommates, right? There's not love. There's not cuddling on the couch. There's not kissing while you're making dinner. There's none of that. So you talk about modeling for your children. You're modeling, you know, okay roommates. If you're not fighting, just the fact that you're coexisting as okay roommates, is that really where you want to set the gauntlet for your kids? Is that really if it's not good enough for your child, it shouldn't be good enough for you. Okay? I think
that's always a barometer.
You, Bonnie. Yeah.
That's a barometer I use. If it's not good enough for your daughter, why would you want your daughter to see you doing it? And you're right. Some of these marriages, you know, I have a couple of our women that, in fact, one of them had read a wonderful story for the book. You know, they were, just like what you're saying, roommates. They didn't have any problems between them. They were good friends. They did everything together. Well, not everything, obviously, but they had, you know, a lot of activities together, but there was just like they were roommates. And a number of our women will tell you the same thing. They didn't have the necessarily abusive husbands like, you know, I did or others did. You know, a good number of them had just wonderful roommates. But that didn't make it any better.
Right. And as you said, if it's not good enough for your baby girl, your 5-year-old, your 10-year-old, your 15-year-old, if you don't want your daughter to live like that, then it's not good enough for you. And that really helped me, Bonnie, when you said that. You had so many clear things that I walked away with that helped me really get grounded in the reality of what I was dealing with and create an exit strategy.
Well, I'm so glad you were able to do that, Heather, because you've helped so many people since then. And the fact that you were able to take your life and really build it into something important by doing work with sexual addictions. You know, I tell women who come to me with sexual addictions that it is different than gay in certain aspects, but it's no better because the results are going to be the same. You can spend years in therapy, years of them going to support groups, but it's still the same. I mean, how many actually change? I don't know any that actually change.
I know one or two, Bonnie, but the one or two that I know are like guys that went back to school to become therapists that totally work on rebuilding their character and their ego strength from the ground zero. The problem with sex addiction, whether it's gay or straight, is you got the sex addiction part, which is they're using that, they can use that, number one, to express their sexual feelings, number two, to self-soothe, number three, to mood regulate. They can use it for all these different things. But sex addiction in itself is really hard to get over. And it's like any addiction. You have to be sober for it for like 5 years before you're considered like basically okay. But with these guys, you're going to have a problem. Like I had a trifecta. I had sex addiction. I had closeted gay guy. I had narcissism. And I had a guy who struggled with substance abuse. Okay, you got any one of those things, they should be a deal breaker. But you've got comorbidity or co-occurring disorders, just get out now. Don't waste 5 years on therapy, except your own therapy to heal up.
Exactly. Women waste so much time that they can never get back and lose time where, you know, I just want to say this because I can't believe the show's already ending, and I really hope you'll do me the great favor coming back in the spring when we reopen the series. But you found a wonderful man. And in retrospect, if you maybe could have had an extra 10 years with him, wouldn't have that been wonderful?
It would have, but, you know, I am super Christian, and I do feel like God's timing is perfect. My husband had a wonderful marriage for 32 years and lost his wife to cancer 5 years ago. So,
no, I'm saying everything worked out fine, but I'm just saying in general, all the time that we put into these marriages where we could be doing something much better, right?
It's time you're never going to get back, and it's money, time, energy, and resources that just I don't want to say you're going down the toilet, but it's not going to solve the foundational problem that you are straight and they're gay, no matter what they say, and they're going to throw anyone and everything under the bus until they're ready. Well, but they, you know, until they're no longer living a double life. And even when my ex started coming clean and not living his double life, he's still a really messed up person because he has the narcissism and substance abuse issue to deal with.
All right. Well, we will pick that up again when you come back again. And Heather, you know, I really love you from my heart. I don't say that many times to people, but you are just the best. And I feel so blessed that I got to meet you. Because you've definitely influenced my life, and I thank you.
Yes, you saved
for everything.
My life, Bonnie.
Thank you, Heather.
You saved my life. All right, take care, Bonnie.
I love you. All right, good night, everybody. We'll be back next week.